This will be the last in this series on the fundamentals. 48 weeks, so not even a whole year, which is really quick. I wanted one study. Ideally, you should have about four, but I just want to move on to something different on a Bible prophecy kind of theme. Before we get into this study, I should let you know the issue that we're addressing, because for some of you, maybe you don't have the just in your background, this was never an issue. But let me explain to you what a lot of people believe about what's called the rapture of the church. I'm going to tell you in a minute that I don't personally endorse this. I don't think it's taught in the New Testament. But it is broadly held. It's not an essential truth. In other words, people can have different opinions on this subject and still be fine Christians on both sides of the issue, okay? So we're not dealing with heaven and hell here. But I do think it deserves at least one teaching point. Here's a view that is widely held, and it goes like this. Sometime, maybe soon, maybe not soon, but the next big event on the calendar, totally surprised and totally unannounced, will be a secret rapture of the church, okay? Christian people. Christian people will be, the word rapture means caught up. They will be caught up, and they will go to be with Jesus. That will be at the beginning, typically, there's variations, I'm just oversimplifying. That will be at the beginning of what's called the Great Tribulation. So the church will get raptured. We won't be here. We'll be gone. Church will be gone. There'll be 7 years here, the Great Tribulation. At the end of the Great Tribulation, there will be the Second Coming. The rapture and the Second Coming are two distinct events. They're not the same event. So rapture of the church, Christians disappear. There used to be, that was hokey, and to be fair, you don't see this much anymore. But there used to be films, Christian kind of Billy Graham Evangelistic Association kind of films, see, where you'd be sitting in a jet, and the pilot's sitting there, and then all of a sudden the co-pilot's gone because he was a Christian, nobody knows where he went. And they take that verse, two people will be grinding at the mill, one taken and the other left, in Matthew. It's not talking about that, but those are the kind of references that get used. So the church is raptured. Then there's 7 years of just tribulation here on earth. At the end of that seven-year period, there's the Second Coming. Jesus comes back. He comes back with his saints. He rules and reigns for, typically it's viewed as a 1,000-year millennial reign. The millennium. You've heard that phrase? It's only used once in the Bible. It's only used in Revelation 20. That's the only place where the phrase is actually used. One day we'll do a study on the millennium as well. Now, that's what we're studying today. That view, rapture of the church, 7 years of tribulation, second coming. Okay, just that much of it. That view is part of a system, and I'm not going into this in a complicated way. The system is known as dispensationalism. How many have heard that word? Okay, dispensationalism, it's a big word, but it's really not that complicated. Dispensationalism, and there's a lot of dispensational Christians. Dispensationalism, simplified, is the belief that God has two peoples, two covenant peoples. Right now, he has two covenant peoples, Jews, with whom he gave the Abrahamic covenant, and the church, all right? So right now we're living in what's called the church age. Jews, by and large, reject the gospel. Some are saved, but en masse, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just telling you, Orthodox Judaism is as opposed to Jesus Christ as the Son of God. Orthodox Judaism is as anti-Christ in that sense as is Islam. Do we all understand that? They absolutely, flat out, reject Jesus Christ as the Messiah. And it's official. Okay. So God has these two covenant peoples. Right now, it's the church age. God's pouring out His Spirit on the Gentiles. That's anybody that's not a Jew. They get saved. But the time is going to come when the time of the Gentiles, the Bible talks about that, is going to come to an end. That's the rapture. See, all the Christians that are saved are gone. Then you're going to have a Jewish. God's going to deal with the Jews. That's why the church isn't going to be here. Because God doesn't have one people. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do with some of those passages in Ephesians where Paul says he's made the two one. He's broken down the wall of partition between them. A lot of Christians don't think this through, what the new covenant really means. Let me ask you the question. You'll see how awkward you feel just when I ask the question. You just watch how you feel inside. Are the Jews God's covenant people? Are you sure? Which covenant? Are you talking about the one that Hebrews says is obsolete? That one? I don't know, Pastor Don. Well, Jesus comes to, we're going to be looking at it very soon, Sunday morning. Jesus comes to Nicodemus. Nicodemus, nobody even points this out. The text tells us right there in John 3, he's a ruler of the Jews. What that means is he's a member of the Sanhedrin. This is the official Orthodox body of the Jews. All right? Nicodemus is one of God's covenant people, is he not? And Jesus says to him, Nicodemus, and I'm telling you, he's not talking to the crowd, Nicodemus, you have to be born again. Without being born again, Nicodemus, a leader of the Jews, a member of the Sanhedrin, without being born again, is Nicodemus's chosenness, is it taking him to heaven?
No.
Are the Jews God's chosen people? All right. All righty. That's the issue we're going to be looking at here. Will there be a secret rapture of the church before the tribulation? And the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and on the land raised his right hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created heaven and what is in it, the earth and what is in it, and the sea and what is in it, that there would be no more delay, no more delay, okay? But that in the days of the trumpet call to be sounded by the seventh angel, the mystery of God would be fulfilled, just as he announced to his servants, the prophets. Okay, the trumpet call. I just wanted to highlight that. No more delay. The book of Revelation, we went through the whole book in this class, right from stem to stern, did the whole thing. Only that phrase that there's going to be no more delay, there's going to be the sounding of the trumpet, and then things are going to be fulfilled. Now, when you look at this theme of the trumpet, it gets repeated just about every time the second coming is talked about. That's those three references. I'm jumping down Matthew 24:31, 1 Corinthians 15:52. 1 Thessalonians 4:16. In every one of them, he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call. Okay? 15:52. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. 1 Thessalonians 4:16. The Lord himself will descend from heaven with the cry of a command, with the voice of the archangel, and with the sound of the trumpet. All right? So in all of these things, there seems to be this time when Jesus comes again and there will be the sounding of the trumpet. And the point I'm going to labor to make in the next 19 minutes is this. I think it is much more consistent with New Testament teaching that there is such a thing as the rapture of the church. People say, Pastor Don, you don't believe in the rapture. I do, because it's talked about. But that the rapture of the church and the second coming of Jesus occur at the same time. They are one event, not two events. I believe, my opinion is, they take place somewhere near the close of the tribulation. All right? One cataclysmic event right near the close of the tribulation where Jesus comes again, the church is raptured, the dead are raised. It all happens in one striking moment. That's my view. And that's what I want to argue in this class. One, The purpose of Paul's words in 1 Thessalonians 4:13. So Paul writes to this church, and he says to them, "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brethren." And of course, in that, I know it seems offensive to people, but that is, there are whole translations that make it gender neutral, which is more politically acceptable to us. But this is the way it was actually written, I grant it. It's a much more patriarchal culture, and brethren would have been the ones to whom Paul would have written this letter. But I still like a translation that tells me what the original said without modifying it, and then we can understand the culture to which it was addressed. I'll do a whole message on that sometime too. Sure you will, Don. "We do not want you to be uninformed, brethren, about those who are asleep." That's those who are dead. Okay, it doesn't mean sleeping. "So that you do not grieve as the rest who have no hope." Now here's my question. Who are the rest? We know this. The rest are people with no hope, right? So who do you think the rest are? I don't want you... He writes to the church and their departed loved ones. I don't want you feeling like the people who have no hope. So what he's saying is, you're not like the unsaved, okay? That just seems obvious to me from the text. It's not a scholarly leap, but just, there's people with no hope. And Paul says, there's sorrow when loved ones die and stuff like that. You might have questions, but we're not like those that don't have any hope. Okay. Now, there are some people, let me just read to save time. There are some people who think the reason for Paul's words in this text is Christian people are worried their departed loved ones, I've actually read this, their departed loved ones will miss out on the rapture of the church, because they're dead, right? They'll miss out on the rapture of the church and not be raised from the dead until the second coming, which, as I said, is usually perceived as being 7 years later. And I think that's very unlikely. I think that's very unlikely for... Let me just give you two reasons. I think there's more, but let me just give you these two reasons. Why would these Christians be so concerned that their departed loved ones would miss out on the rapture and have to wait until the second coming to have their bodies raised from the dead? Because Paul's already taught to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. Okay? So why would these people be worried that they're going to miss the rapture and be with Jesus when in the teaching they've already received, the minute you die, absent from the body, that's what death is to be present with... It just somehow makes no sense to me. I think there's a much better explanation for these believers' concern, and you get it from the context, point B. The context of Paul's response gives, that's a typo, gives a clue to these Christians' concern. Paul told them not to grieve, as do the rest who have no hope. Okay? Some of these Christians were mourning their lost loved ones as though there was no resurrection from the dead. They were of the false understanding that only those who were alive would experience the blessings associated with the second coming of Jesus. These Christians were thinking like those described in 1 Corinthians 15:12. We know people thought this because Paul tells us that they thought this. Now, if Christ is proclaimed as raised from the dead, how can some of you, this is in the church, right? He's writing to the church. How can some of you say there's no resurrection from the dead? That's what these people were worried about. So if we're alive and Jesus comes, that's great. We go to be with Jesus, the second coming, but there's people who are already dead. And there was a teaching around that there was no resurrection from the dead. So once my wife dies or my husband dies, then they miss out on everything. That's what Paul means when he says, no. We don't grieve like those who have no hope. And Paul urges these believers to remember the reality of the resurrection of all believers when Jesus comes again. No one will be left out. Got to hurry, too. In Paul's understanding, the resurrection of departed, dead believers takes place at the second coming of Jesus Christ. Do you see 1 Thessalonians 4:14 to 18? For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. This is interesting. God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep, not their physical bodies. It's important to know what he's saying. Absent from the body is present with the Lord. But where's the body right now? Where's my dad's body? New Market Cemetery. Where's my dad? With the Lord. Both. The body, right, is in the cemetery. He's with the Lord. But at the second coming, he's coming with my dad. And something else is going to happen that's really precious and Christians never talk about. I don't know why. My dad's body will come out of that cemetery. They will be reunited. No one's going to exist eternally as a gas floating around, wafting through space. We will be spatial, temporal, glorified, true enough, beings with bodies. We won't be floating around on harps with cream cheese. There's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. This is wonderful teaching. It's a wonderful concept that whatever reality you have to your life now, let's put it this way. What are you doing this week? Whatever reality you have to your life now will feel like the shadow compared to the reality that your existence will have when Jesus comes again. This will seem like the flimsy. All right. God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. So the souls, the spirits, whatever word you want to use. Now he goes on, 15, for this we declare to you by word from the Lord. Paul says, I'm not making this up. I got this from Jesus. That's what he means. That we who are alive, okay, so some people haven't died. They're just going to be like this when Jesus comes again. We who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord. Okay, so we didn't die. We will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with the cry of command, with the voice of the archangel, with the sound of the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ, that's the bodies. The first thing that's going to happen, this is the grace of God. He raises the dead bodies first, they're united, so that they see and take part in an event that otherwise they would just miss. Right? So the first thing God does is he makes sure. This is the way God gets glory. I will make sure that every person who has ever drawn breath will be standing in a physical body to see my second coming. Nobody will miss it. That's the kind of event it's going to be. Talking too much. Sorry. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, with the voice of the archangel, with the trumpet of God. The dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive, that's us, if he came back today, we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up. That's rapture. Caught up together with him. In the clouds, meet the Lord in the air, so we will always be with the Lord. It doesn't say we'll always be in heaven. It says we'll always be with him. He comes, we come with him. We will always be with him. That's what Paul says. So encourage one another. So 2a, those who have died do not miss on any of the great end time events. Even if they have been dead 1,000 years, Paul says they will see the coming of the Lord in glory. B, the resurrection of departed saints, okay, those that have died long ago, the rapture of living saints, that's those who are alive when Jesus comes, and the second coming of Jesus will take place at the sounding of a great trumpet. So that ties in with what we read in Revelation 10, Matthew 24, 1 Corinthians 15. It all ties in, and those passages are all talking about the second coming, not a secret rapture of the church. Now let me just ask you. When you read those verses, 1 Thessalonians 4:14 to 18, the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, the voice of the archangel, the sound of the trumpet, the dead in Christ will be raised. Does that sound like a secret event to you? Like, really? Does that sound like a secret rapture? That clearly, though, is when we who are alive will be caught up, right? That's when it happens. Okay, 3. How the day of the Lord comes like a thief, because there was a film long ago. That's when they were still called films. A Thief in the Night. Anybody remember seeing A Thief in the Night? Sure, I remember that. 1 Thessalonians 5:13. Now concerning the times and the seasons, brothers, you need no one have anything written to you, for you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. There it is, Pastor Don. There's that rapture thing. See, secret, like a thief in the night. While people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. And the point there is, of course, Christ's coming will only come upon unbelievers like a thief. Believers will not be surprised by the coming of Jesus. That's 1 Thessalonians 5:4-5. But you are not in darkness, brothers, that the day for that day to surprise you like a thief. You are all children of light, children of the day. You are not of the night or the darkness. So the idea there is, right, for people who, Jesus said in Matthew 24, same event, that the people like Noah's day, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, and they didn't realize until the last minute that the door was going to be shut, right? Remember that passage? Cool. That's those people. The people who have no interest. They're not looking what's happening. They're not following Jesus. They're in the dark. Paul says, it's a thief in the night for those people. But not because it's a secret. The ark that's a big boat being built right there. It didn't have some sleight of hand, you know, but they weren't paying attention. Even labor pains. Fine, the pains may come upon you suddenly, but labor does not creep up on you. You don't go to bed one night and then the next morning you're 9 months pregnant. You know, it's a gradual process, that whole thing. And if a woman has any sense at all, usually by the time she's 8.5 months pregnant, she goes, wait a minute, I think there's a baby coming. Notice the use of that phrase, B, 5 minutes, okie dinah. The day of the Lord. That's in 1 Thessalonians 5:2. Paul uses that very same phrase in 2 Thessalonians 2:1-3. Now we request you, brethren, with regard to the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, second coming, and our gathering together to him, rapture. Same sentence. That you be not quickly shaken from your composure or disturbed either by a spirit or a message or a letter as if from us to the effect that the day of the Lord has come, like it's already happened. For no one, let no one in any way deceive you, for it, what is the it? It is the day of the Lord, right? That's what he's just talked about. The end of verse 2, the day of the Lord. Let no one in any way deceive you, for it, the day of the Lord, will not come unless the apostasy comes first, the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction. So the issue Paul is addressing here, 1 Thessalonians 4:5, was the concern of the saints who were already in their graves, that the glorious events of the second coming, they missed them. Okay, we just looked at that. Paul said, no, they'll be raised first. Don't worry, the dead are raised. Now the issue here is slightly different. 2 Thessalonians 2, Paul writes to people who were afraid. They have somehow missed the events of the day of the Lord. And Paul says they were shaken, and he says they were disturbed because of that misunderstanding. We've already seen that they felt the day of the Lord was already upon them. But what exactly did that phrase mean to them? And there are two common interpretations to Paul's words in 2 Thessalonians 2. Here's pre-tribulationists, those who say there's a secret rapture before the tribulation. They read those words, and they take this text to mean that these Christians were afraid they had missed the rapture, and Paul was trying to assure them that they had not. And I don't think that's very satisfying, because Paul's answer to them is the last thing you would expect him to say if these Christians were thinking they had somehow missed a pre-tribulational rapture. Look at what he says in 3 and 5, 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 and 5. Let no one deceive you in any way, for that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first. That's interesting. The man of lawlessness is revealed, Antichrist. The son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called God and object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? Now, to me, it hardly makes sense for Paul to tell them about seeing Antichrist first if it's a pre-trib rapture. Because when does Antichrist manifest himself? During the tribulation, right? So Paul says to these people, don't worry. You haven't missed the rapture. Because before the rapture, and this is now what I think, because before the rapture takes place, you will see this rebellion, and you will see the man of sin revealed. That's what Paul says to them. And that only makes sense if Paul was actually telling them that the rapture doesn't take place before the tribulation, because he wouldn't tell them to look for Antichrist if they were going to be long gone before he ever manifested himself. Everybody get what I'm saying? Jump down to the little point two. These Christians were concerned because of the extreme. So what were they worried about? What were they concerned about? These Christians were concerned because of the extreme nature of the persecution they were facing. Look at 1:6. And you became imitators of us and of the Lord, for you received the word in much affliction. Look at 2:1-4. Therefore, we ourselves boast about you in the churches of God for your steadfastness in faith in all your persecutions and in the afflictions that you are enduring. Here's what I think makes more sense. They were worried, thinking that the day of the Lord had already come. Because of the extreme persecution they were facing, someone came up with the idea that they were already in the Great Tribulation. Right? And from the previous teaching they had received from Paul, they knew that if they were in the Great Tribulation, the second coming was right around the corner, right? Because it comes at the close of the tribulation. And here's what was happening. Because they thought we're in the tribulation, Jesus is coming in at most 3.5 years. And you can see it in the text. Paul says that many of them were quitting their jobs. He tells them not to. It's right in there. They weren't taking care of their responsibilities for their families and loved ones. It's in the text. You can read it. Because what's the point? The end is here. That's the issue Paul's dealing with. And Paul's solution was to tell them they needn't worry about having missed the day of the Lord, because the coming of the day of the Lord will be identifiable in advance. Paul tells them that Christians will be able to see the rising up of Antichrist before the day of the Lord comes. Why would Paul try to convince these people that the day of the Lord had not come by pointing out a man of lawlessness they were never going to see anyway if the rapture took place before the tribulation? It doesn't make sense to me that way. What I'm saying is, God doesn't have two plans of being saved, one for the church, and then another way where they will be saved during the tribulation. Jews will go back to the old sacrificial system. That's what dispensationalists believe. What I'm saying is, God has one people. He has one people, Jew and Gentile. The rapture of the church and the second coming take place at the close of the tribulation. And God will keep us in the middle of it without taking us off the planet. How did he preserve Noah and his family during the flood? Did they leave the earth? He protects them in the middle of it. And that's the way it'll be again.